Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches, they never changed anything.
Yeah.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Black America is potentially the most dangerous group of humans alive today. Dangerous to who? Dangerous to the corporate empire, Illuminati, imperial scum, whatever you want to call them, white supremacists.
White supremacy is the problem. You just happen to be white.
How much of the problems in the black community are the blacks' own fault?
Well, white supremacy is the main problem in our community.
How much of the problems are your own fault?
Excuse me. If we resolve white supremacy, we will resolve the problems of unemployment. We will resolve the problems of bad housing. The Reagan administration probably represented the epitome of white supremacy by cutting into every domestic livable program that whites and blacks had, especially poor people, and they showed their relationship with these people by proving their insensitivity.
Well, Mr. Cooper.
And the reason they're dangerous is because they're quite easily united. It might seem not true because there's so much division within black people in America, but the only reason they're divided is because the corporate empire spent billions of dollars keeping them divided because they are potentially dangerous.
Mr. Coakley, you've attacked Jesse Jackson, you attacked the late Mayor Harold Washington, you called them colorless. What black leaders, political leaders in this country do you respect?
Well, I think politics has a way of accommodation. I don't think we have true political leaders in the sense of that you're going to find purity in politics. Politics is about accommodation and compromise. When our black leaders go into politics, as was discussed recently in Harper's Magazine, blacks have to prove to whites that they will protect their interests first. That's why politics is not the type of game that we're going to continue to invest all our time in, because it's proven that it doesn't work. Politics will not whip white supremacy, but clear, accurate, documented challenges to white supremacy, as well as action, grassroots action, taken against the forces of white supremacy.
What makes them dangerous? Well, 45 million people united in the U.S. would be very dangerous. What kind of things is dangerous? Well, you might think I'm talking about protesting or getting together and rallying and that kind of stuff. Well, no, that's not the kind of danger I'm talking about. 45 million people united could do some serious damage to the financial market. Serious damage to the financial market. Serious damage to the financial market.
So I'm dark-skinned with an accent, and when you had an accent back then, Africans, well, it wasn't that many Africans in America then. It was mostly Jamaican. So you had an accent, you automatically Jamaican.
Right.
Africans, well, it wasn't that many Africans in America then. It was mostly Jamaican.
You have to be logical. If I know that in this hotel room, they have food every day, and I'm knocked on the door every day to eat, and they open the door, let me see the flowing food around, but they're telling me there's no food in here. Every day, I'm standing outside trying to sing my way in. We are hungry, please let us in. We are hungry, please let us in. After about a week, that song is going to change to, we hungry, we need some food. After 2-3 weeks, it's like, give me a little food, ragging out the door. After years, then you just like picking the lock, coming through the door blasting. We asked 10 years ago. We was asking with the Panthers. We was asking with them, you know, the civil rights movement. We was asking. You know, now those people that were asking, they're all dead and in jail. So now what do you think we're going to do?
What that was all about, the revolution will not be televised. That was about the fact that the first change that takes place is in your mind. You have to change your mind before you change the way you live and the way you move. So when we said that the revolution will not be televised, we were saying that, like, the thing that's going to change people is something that no one will ever be able to capture on film. It'll just be something that you see, and all of a sudden you realize, I'm on the wrong page, or I'm on the right page, but I'm on the wrong note. And I've got to get in sync with everyone else to understand what's happening in this country.
To watch all of my exclusive content not featured here on my channel, log on to my website at imjustheretomakeyouthink.com/films. In today's society of America, millions of people of all complexions are still undergoing the effects of a variety of dominant social engineering experiments, which just so happens to play a prominent role among their everyday lives unknowingly. Not only that, there are in fact particular prominent groups of people that have set the mandatory rules and regulations that all American citizens must abide by. Still to this very day, and when it specifically comes to the so-called African Americans, or rather the descendants of the copper-colored indigenous people who occupied all of the now American lands pre-colonial times, the experimental methodologies are deeply rooted, especially physically and mentally, by way of things such as industrialism, environmental racism, compulsory education, manipulative indoctrination, paper genocide, and eugenics. However, I would like for you to note that the freedom of having life is like a seed. It cannot grow on its own and become a plant unless the climate changes environmentally. Now, many of you can recall hearing the phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I agree with it to a certain extent, because even though you may be doing great right now, you should always make room for improvements, or rather changes, because it's better to be prepared than repaired, after the damage is already done. Which brings me to my very first point of this segment, and that is, why are people of color in America considered to be the biggest threat throughout American society? Now, this question alone would be continuously answered throughout this video and my other correlating documentaries, because of how much detailed information is critically important to note when answering this question. This era can be traced all the way back to the late 1700s and very early 1800s, at a time when white African and European colonizationalists, or rather kidnappers, were afraid of the threat of being murdered by the so-called coloreds, or rather the indigenous people of North America, due to the multiple Indian raids, rebellions, documented and undocumented wars rapidly occurring during this time period. This is also the very same time period where these kidnappers demanded that the Negroes be removed from the lands of America and shipped away to newly established American colonized lands in Africa along the coast. Multiple religious societies campaigned for this idea to become a reality, especially the Catholics and the Quakers, just to name a few. But the ball began to roll once John Lynch wrote a letter to the president. According to records held by the National Archives, in a letter to then former President Thomas Jefferson, dated December 25, 1810, John Lynch, who colonized lands he named after himself called Lynchburg, Virginia, made a descriptive proposition to Thomas Jefferson that called for the, quote, colonization of the Nigger people on the coast of Africa so that a settlement can be established for immigrating the freed people of color out of North America and into Africa somewhere along the coast. In my documentary called African American Slaves in West Africa, History Books Are Lying, Part 2, I shared much detailed informative information in relation to what really happened in American history. I exposed that we were all led to believe that our ancestors were stolen from parts of West Africa and then shipped to the Americas, when in reality, that information was told to us all in reverse. Some of our ancestors were forcefully relocated from southern east lands of North America to lands west of the Mississippi River, and also along the coast of Africa, and especially South and West Africa. I highly recommend that you watch that video, for it is critically important for the sake of our real documented history. Now, another side of this era would be allowing the people of color to think freely, being as though English was not our ancestors' original language to begin with. The early European and African colonizationalists implemented manipulative methods to force their own traditions, language, and cultures, just to name a few, upon our ancestors mentally, which in turn rapidly obstructed our ancestors' well-being physically, systematically. This method was also purposely designed to decimate their literacy and critical thinking capabilities, along with quelling the thoughts of retaliation by fear-mongering, allowing for this social engineering format of eugenics to prevail from generation to generation, affecting only those who are forcefully under the spell of its digested forms of slavery, or rather oppression, under the mysterious provisions and racist ideologies of white supremacy.
So I asked my students, okay, what happened during Reconstruction, right after the Civil War? What went on there? And what happened to me was an aha reaction, or I might better call it an oh no reaction, because 16 out of my 17 students said to me, that's the time when, right after the Civil War, Reconstruction, blacks took over the government of the southern states, but they were too soon out of slavery, and so they screwed up, and white folks had to take control again.
Birth of a Nation,
Birth of a Nation, Gone with the Wind, all rolled into one. And, of course, these are all African-American students. I thought, my gosh, what must they do to you to believe that the one time your group was center stage in American history, they screwed up? Now, it'd be a different matter if this happened, but it didn't happen. This is, in fact, what we in sociology call BS history. That is bad sociology. BS history. That is bad sociology. They started the public school systems for both races. There were scattered schools for white folks, but no system that included the whole state. And, of course, there were no schools at all for black folks. It was illegal, a felony, to teach even free blacks to read and write. So they didn't screw up. So anyway, I went to nearby schools. I watched, this was just before massive school desegregation, so I watched black teachers teaching all black classes this white supremacist history that was complete BS, because they were just teaching what was in the book.
In my documentary called The Duplicity of the Public School System, I shared much detailed informative information about the pseudoscientific methods utilized by way of college professors, anthropologists, sociologists, and many other correlating co-conspirators in order to teach all people of color, along with non-elite white people, about white supremacy-filled U.S. history, world history, and so-called African-American studies in history, even though there were in fact very few of these scholars that were adamantly opposed to such teachings.
And what, may I ask, is an Aryan? I don't know myself. But let us see what our present so-called authorities have to say about him. They say he is tall, slender, blue-eyed, and blonde. There is no Aryan race. And more important, there is no master race. There are people who may find these ideas convenient, but science cannot support them. There is no scientific proof that there is any correlation between a man's racial characteristics and his native ability or character. In all racial groups, we find the same range of potentialities. We find idiots and geniuses. We find criminals and philanthropists. We must judge each man as an individual and not by the color of his skin or his eyes or by the length of his nose. Come in, gentlemen. It's comfortable. And remember that there is no master race. That is a scientific truth. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying.
Even during the times when the existence of federal laws prevented people of color to learn anything dealing with these foreigners' ambitions, agendas, and even their own propaganda, one must not forget about the year of 1776, when a new sheriff pinned his shiny badge to his chest and a code of conduct was created and implemented into the so-called laws of the lands. I'll be sharing more details about that in a later planned documentary. Now, the next part of this threat is also very noteworthy and critically important to the descendants of the indigenous Aboriginal Niji of this land, Turtle Island, now known as the Americas. Many of you can recall the American Holocaust of 1921, when the U.S. and federal government ordered the bombing of so-called Negro residents and businesses in the Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, murdering thousands of people of color and destroying hundreds of their own very prosperous businesses by way of U.S. Army planes, literally dropping bomb after bomb throughout the Greenwood District by way of an executive order called Martial Law, in which this specific order was created by Congress and President Woodrow Wilson of the Democratic Party before leaving office in March of 1921 and then immediately approved and implemented into law by then President Warren Harding of the Republican Party in May of 1921, just a few days prior to inflicting a deadly Holocaust upon its own American citizens. Now, I originally named my documentary about this The American Holocaust of 1921, and after the documentary accumulated 60,000 views in 4 hours, YouTube removed the video. However, after nearly a month of back and forth, it was placed back on my channel, and it is now called The History of the Negro Wall Street, The Unforgettable Horrific Event of 1921. That is a documentary that I highly recommend for all people to watch. Now, I said all of that to say this. There is a reason why the famous influential activist named Frederick Douglass was able to contribute, quote, tens of thousands of dollars of his own money in order to save the abolishment of all 37 branches of the Freedmen's Savings and Trust Banks that were created by law through then-President Abraham Lincoln on March 3, 1865. And before I state that reason, I want you to note the timeline here. The Civil War began on April 12, 1861, in which history states that the war occurred allegedly due to disagreements between politicians of the North, or rather the Union, and the politicians of the South, or rather the Confederate States, over the abolishment of slavery. However, the truth is that the Civil War was actually about integrating the free enterprise system with more of the indigenous aboriginals of the American lands, being as though many of our ancestors during this time period were not slaves, but rather indentured servants, who were literally sharecroppers that owned farms, banks, and other institutions of business, which in turn allowed both heads of the same snake to acknowledge the fact that our ancestors were rising up as capitalists within this industrialized society. In other words, the Union recognized that the so-called Negroes in the North and the South were rapidly prospering tremendously economically, and they wanted to go into business with them to further their expertise in the free enterprise system. But most politicians of the South disagreed with this notion, being as though it single-handedly threatened the longevity of their not-so-prosperous small to medium-sized businesses. So the Civil War began in April 1861 and completed in May of 1865. Before the Civil War ended, some very important key factors occurred within this timeline. For example,
see, that manipulative lie was told to you as a fear-mongering tactic in order to depict that one race of people are somehow superior to others. When King stated that through an act of Congress, the government was giving away millions of acres of land, he was referring to the Homestead Act of 1862, in which just a little over 30 years prior to this law, our ancestors' cultures, heritage, history, identities, resources, and lands were stripped away and became possessions of the federal government in order to be distributed to the, quote, free whites that immigrated to America from Africa and Europe during the early 1800s.
Which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. Which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor.
The Homestead Act of 1862 granted these white peasants, as King describes, our lands that were stripped from our indigenous ancestors and all of the specialized benefits the federal government promised our ancestors by peace treaties that they would receive for being 90% of the help they needed in order for the United States to win all 61 documented wars that occurred during the 1800s alone. Side note, the Emancipation Proclamation abolished all forms of slavery the very next year in 1863. The so-called free Negroes and the so-called freed Negroes, along with the so-called freedmen, were royally upset and disgusted with the federal government. So they continued the multiple rebellions until they saw change. The Homestead Act of 1866 was established by the government that allowed the Negro 40 acres and a mule. But the catch was that the Negro had to buy the land, and the price of the lands were lowered just enough so that the Negro cannot afford it still. This is what King meant by America refused to give the Negro any land. These Homestead Acts gave these foreigners government-funded assistance, where the government hired our ancestors to teach these foreigners how to farm.
Not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. With government money to teach them how to farm.
Because keep in mind, a true foreigner or immigrant wouldn't know how to grow anything in a mass area of land that they are not accustomed with or never inhabited before in their life. This is why King stated, our farms.
They provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. In order that they could mechanize their farms.
Okay, so now, this timeline that I'm referring to begins with the Civil War in April 1861. Then, the first official Homestead Act of 1862. Then, the very next year, the Emancipation Proclamation Bill was implemented into law in 1863. In which that bill alone had absolutely nothing to do with freeing slaves from chains and shackles, like how history so loves to claim. No. In fact, the word emancipate derives from the Latin word emancipatus, which is the process of being set free from legal, social, or political restrictions, which has nothing to do with enslavement. In fact, the Latin word for civil is civilis, which means to affect fellow citizens in a legal or political sense. In other words, the stories of slavery in the Americas did not happen the way we were originally taught by authors of American history and world history. Because once an individual literally researches their family's genealogical background by records, instead of taking the word from some self-proclaimed scholars within their own communities with absolutely no publicly verifiable evidence to manifest, they will be met with the truth that these so-called slaves in America were actually prisoners of war who were contracted as indentured servants by way of industrialism, which also means that your ancestors were sharecroppers, being as though they were the original landowners who were contracted by the tenants, or rather the white colonizationalists who immigrated to North America from Africa and Europe, in which these tenants were allowed to use the sharecropper's land by contract or treaty in return for a share of the crops produced on the sharecropper's very own land. But this deal went bad, obviously due to a particular group of people that had a totally different hidden agenda in mind. The next part of this timeline would be President Abraham Lincoln crafting the 40 Acres and a Mule, Field Action 15 in Savannah, Georgia, for the so-called Negro sharecroppers during the months of January and February in the year of 1865. Which should immediately indicate to you that the Lincoln administration was willing to work out multiple other economic deals with the complaining indigenous people of North America who were rebelling and raiding multiple territories at this time due to being betrayed and undervalued by both the local and federal governments. So the very next month, in March of 1865, Lincoln was sure to create federal banks for the so-called freedmen that fought on both sides of the American Civil War, along with their descendants.
These banks are known as the Freedmen Savings and Trust Banks, or the Freedmen's Banks for short, in which over 72,000 accounts were opened, which led these banks to raise a staggering $52 million at that time, which is equivalent to over $100 billion right now, making it the largest grossing bank in American history at that time. Then, the very next month came, and President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated on April 15, 1865, which forced Frederick Douglass to take over the Freedmen's Banks, using tens of thousands of his own sharecropping money, which was a lot of money at that time due to him being a businessman of color, just like millions of our ancestors were. Then, in the year of 1875, after much demand economically, along with well-respected hard work, continued to manifest by way of the indigenous aboriginals of this land, Congress passed the first ever civil rights bill in American history, allowing for the white immigrants to go into business with the indigenous businessmen and women of America. Our ancestors were prospering so well that a surge of newly established businesses and banks were rapidly changing the economy on a daily basis, and it also outnumbered the amount of banks owned and operated by whites. This time was uncommonly known as the beginning stages of the Silver Rights Movement, to a point where businesses owned by people of color went from about 3,000 to nearly 60,000 businesses. And the people of color that owned banks went from about 35 banks to nearly 150 banks nationwide from the years of 1875 all the way until the year of 1934, according to the FDIC and the Federal Reserve. Now, so many important events occurred in the year of 1934 alone that I will have to save it for part two of this segment. However, I would like for you to note that people would love to claim that the place called Africa has the most resources ever in history. But if that is the actual truth, then why do you consistently see real Africans immigrating to North America to work at a job or to open up their own business and collect resources from here in America, then publicly inform their friends, colleagues, and co-workers that they are doing this all in order to send it all back to their families who are residing in Africa, literally? See, the answer to that question is very simple, because in today's society, the one set group of people who unknowingly accumulates all of the wealth upon this nation that keeps this country running in the first place but would immediately spread its wealth to everyone under the sun other than themselves, which in turn attracts national and international businesses to their pockets alone, are in fact the so-called African Americans of this country today, which in turn leads you to now know the truth about why multiple economic records would state every single year that so-called African Americans would make up around 1% of America's wealth overall. Purposely telling you the story in reverse in order to hide the truth, making that the real reason why African Americans, or rather the indigenous aboriginals of Turtle Island, are the biggest threat to America's society, but they just don't know it yet.
I'm just here to make you think.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not. And I will
leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Then I'll jump back in. And now I'm going to step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm going to be real. I'm going to say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question. Just because I can't, I'm not gonna sit here and say every single African American side either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking. You said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African Americans feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or I you can't speak, you didn't grow up like I did. Like I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it. Anybody gonna say nothing? I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state, is we're at this stage in 2020, we're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but, and that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard is going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about landowners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth.
Yeah.
You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, do we play the victim?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted, or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well, I think we have to define play the victim. Okay. I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
So what do we call in playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim. Like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for
play,
you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
or
to me.
Or always complaining. Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This
you know
is
what I mean?
I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what it triggered in my head.
Mm-hmm. So
to say, like, we can't, I don't think you can outrule or, like, just say, hey, we're, some black people aren't playing the victim, because people, everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be using excuse, playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, and like you said, like, we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment, like, at wherever you work. And even you said you have, there's one person at D1 that's black. There's, and we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing the victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or wherever part of life.
Yeah,
that, that's kind of just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. You know, I also don't like the term playing the victim, because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we, you know, I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through, I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it, because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you will be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized, or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. It's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was, to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s, like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like, it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like, there are people alive still, like, you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this.
Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's
not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting, because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon because of what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember, like, Booker T. Wash in, like, the 1890s to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying
hey,
I'm that old, right? I'm not trying to give me some
you
respectful.
Remember him, right?
Yeah. I'm the historian.
He said basically,
is my grade showing that much, though, for real?
No, I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, what, 130 years later from him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But, I mean, you're only, like you said, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I'd kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You could talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking it in.
I'm sorry.
I'm listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught don't work I'll just be honest. My father don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you can take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. No, it was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family. Mm. Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught. Mm. And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
So give me, rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing a victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Has that experience kind of helped you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together and, you know, one of them yelled, "Hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby." you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And still like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are.
Mm.
And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also tried to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that the young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know. But when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. But I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, yeah. Be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's
not
new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
How do I have my power and my commitment if I don't have the sources, the income, or a home, or the power to help our people?
Well, I would argue that the income and a home is often a barrier to your commitment.
Mm.
What I find today is Black people who have that education, who are in a privileged position, that privileged position often becomes a barrier to them reaching back to help other African people. If you look at what's going on in the NFL right now,
yes.
Where you have these very aggressive alpha males,
mm-hmm.
Our Black athletes, particularly our NFL athletes in particular, they're gladiators, they're warriors. They're some of the biggest, meanest men you'll ever see in your life.
Yes, they
are.
But
when it comes to confronting white supremacy, structural inequity, racism, and systemic discrimination, they are some of the most cowardly Black men I've ever seen in my life. Ray Lewis, Shaquille O'Neal,
yeah.
Little Wayne, just to name a few of the most ridiculous excuses for Black men I've seen over the past couple of weeks and what they've had to say out of their mouths on national television. Yeah. I mean, for Little Wayne to sit up there and say he's never dealt with racism. You are from Louisiana. You are a richly melanated Black man from the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's no Black man in America. I think we would all agree that Barack Obama may have been the most privileged Black man ever.
Yeah.
Even he has had to deal with racism. I know rich Black males, they have had to deal with racism.
Oh,
I know biracial Black males, they have had to deal with racism. But you're going to sit up here on national TV and go as far as to lie. That was a lie. Go as far as to lie and say you never dealt with racism because you're too afraid to speak up on behalf of your people who are suffering from police genocide, given the fact that you've made millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Off of rehearsing and revamping negative stereotypes of Black women and Black men. I mean, your songs is about killing Black folks, selling dope.
I was going to say
he's not
one of the people we want to stand on the front
exactly.
line. Now, if he was well versed in understanding and not faded all the time, then we would stand up for us because his money is his power. But he's not there.
What he said was unjustifiable, regardless of how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the pill could have been better swallowed. Had he not made such or built for himself such a lucrative estate
mm-hmm.
on the backs of Black stereotypes.
It's true.
So it's one thing that you benefit yourself off of negative caricatures of Black people,
mm-hmm.
and then you turn right around and defend white folks.
And
so you've already hurt us with
your
music, and you're going to turn around and hurt us again with defending white folks. Nobody should ever buy another Lil Wayne album in their lives.
Now, you know, culturally, we are entertainers and we're sports figures, and we have a lot of entertainers and sports figures that have millions of dollars. What is it going to take to have those? Because culturally, that's what we do. We dance, sing, and we play sports, and we make millions of dollars in those areas. What is it going to take to unite some of these football players and basketball players and singers and dancers to come off some of that to build some of these banks and invest in some of these banks to go back to their neighborhoods in which they've grown up in and now they've left. What is it going to take for us to kind of convince some of them who have the millions of dollars to put back into the community?
Well, first of all, we have to recognize that our black celebrities, be they athletes or entertainers, we see them as people, but from a capitalist perspective, they are a corporate product. C is a corporate product. LeBron James is a corporate product. They are merchandise. That means that they are controlled by the corporation. Everything they think, everything they say, everything they do must be rubber stamped by the corporation that created them. They are merchandise. They are not free to exercise their own discretion to use their money how they see fit. We have to understand the black celebrity is in a position to create economic revolution for black people. And because of that, they are being watched more closely by the FBI than Umar Johnson ever could be. I can talk about it, but they have the money to make it a reality. And because of that, they are under a surveillance that's greater than anything COINTELPRO has ever put in our community. So that is to say that they will never be the catalyst for the economic change. They will come in after the change has already taken place, which means we have to do the work. We have to bake the cake, and the celebrities will put the cherry on top when it's done.
Wow. Well, Dr. Umar, we're going to go to the phone lines right here. We have a caller that's been waiting for a while here, and we're going to go to those. Caller, 214, you're on the Bobby Eaton Show.
Yes. Good evening, and I wanted to address the sports and entertainment aspect of raising funds for the community, and that would be that these corporations bankroll, like the doc said, these athletes, but they already know where the two athletes come from. So you flip that as black people and you send your black athletes to black universities where that you filter that money from the corporations to the black universities. They're going to follow. America loves athletes, and they're going to follow the athletes. The money's going to follow the athletes, and you flip it and you turn it to where you have to talk to your community and send your young black athletes to black colleges where they're more respected, they're more comfortable, and they're more inclined to educate themselves.
So how you feel about that, Dr. Umar?
I actually totally agree with him. In fact, I was questioned on another interview, actually several interviews, about the Black Missouri, University of Missouri Black Student Athlete protest that took place a few months ago, not only in Missouri, but at many of the predominantly white institutions around the country. Black students and black student athletes engaged in protests against racism on campus. And people asked my opinion, and in support of what the caller just said, I said that if these students were really serious about fighting against racism, you would not be giving $30,000 of your money a year away to a racist white college. You would divest from the University of Missouri and take your $30,000 a year to Howard or Spelman or Hampton Clark or Morehouse. If you really wanted revolution, you would simply cripple the white college by divesting. What could any of the Division I white colleges do without the black male athlete? Do you realize that many of these Division I white colleges, they make more money off of a football team than they do from operation, including tuition? So he's correct. That would be revolution for every Division I black athlete to leave the white college and go to a black one. But there's only one problem with that. Black people lack the cultural commitment to make a major move like that.
In the financial arena,
Chinese would do it. Yeah. Latinos would do it. Arabs would do it. East Indians would do it. European Jews would do it.
black people hate being black too much for you to expect them to do something in the interest of other black people.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'm glad you said it that way, because
yeah.
Oh,
wow,
my God. That is so true, you know.
Laying it out.
They're just laying it out the way it really, really supposed to be, you know.
And it comes from years and years of that propaganda and that mindset that we have that needs to be changed. Like the caller says, let's take our children and put them somewhere where they're respected, and where they're still going to garner those big monies,
right? Right.
In the end,
also
and
think,
education,
Dr. Umar, don't you think that we need more black media, you know, like TV and radio, and more communication type of, you know?
Yes, you have to have your own information and propaganda dissemination network and system. Why? Because the brain, I don't care how intelligent you are, the brain will always be the victim of repetition. Anything that the mind is consistently exposed to, no matter how intelligent that mind is, that mind will come to believe it. Look on television. Look at the most popular shows on television. They are very demeaning and disrespectful to black women in particular. Black people in general, our children are being cramped by scandal and housewives and empire and Orange is the New Black and all these disrespectful shows about black folk. This is nothing but informational warfare. And the problem is black people actually think that entertainment is not political. Entertainment is the most political aspect of American society, because before you can exterminate a people physically, you have to exterminate their image in the minds of the community. So before you can kill black men on the street, you have to kill the image of black men on television.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Umar, I'm so glad you said it. I've been doing media.
We've been talking about it.
I've been doing media for about 25 years, man, and you are so correct and on point with that, because I've seen how much power can be used.
Well, most viruses are created by the Food and Drug Administration, the Rockefeller World Population Council. Nearly every virus. Some of them are used for genocide. Others are used to destabilize economies. I believe this coronavirus was dropped in China by the United States government, okay, to destabilize the Chinese economy. Remember, they had the bird flu before. Okay, but because Chinese people operate on the art of war psychology, they will never go public and say America threw this over here. They will just simply plot their own strategy of revenge.
Okay, so explain that. So you're saying the Chinese people operate on an art of war mentality, which means
you never let your enemy know what you're thinking.
Wow, that is one of the principles of the art of war.
Yes, deception is the essence of the art of war, right? So I believe America did it. But I would also tell you this. I wouldn't be surprised if China did it either. Because China is overpopulated, and this could be a very quick, reduce the population strategy that the Chinese are throwing on their own people. My first thought is America. My second thought, China did it themselves.
Okay, so you don't think the pharmaceutical companies have anything to do with
it? Well, the pharmaceutical companies working for the United States government may very well have had something to do with it, because they would be the conduits.
Anything that you want to give people advice on protecting themselves in terms of this thing hitting us?
Not necessarily. I think black people need to be protected, period, because everything coming at us. Like, the Chinese may have to deal with a coronavirus. We got to deal with a coronavirus. We got a Shaniqua virus they call Zika.
We
got AIDS virus, you know what I mean? We got viruses all day long, so we just need to be careful, period.
Yeah, definitely. You're having something that's coming up on schools.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's talk about that.
Personal helicopter. Not a commercial plane. Personal. Personal helicopter. Kobe Bryant's personal helicopter goes down during a routine 15, 20-minute flight, a flight he'd been making for 25 years, and it goes down. And they still don't have all the answers. First they said 4 people died. Then it was 5 people died. Then it was 9 people died. And then they said it was a fire on board the helicopter. Then they said it was a fire beneath the helicopter. And now this morning, they're trying to blame it on the fog. They say it was too foggy for the pilot to take the helicopter, but he asked for special permission. He asked for special permission to take the helicopter anyway. If you see the video of the crash, which is a very heart-wrenching video to watch. I only saw it once. I don't even want to see it again. But when you see that video, fog had nothing to do with that accident. Fog had nothing to do with that accident. That sky was clear enough for him to fly. And all of a sudden, you see the propeller go out. You saw the what the hell is Kobe Bryant's propeller going out on his helicopter? Why did the propeller go out on Kobe Bryant's helicopter? When is the last time you saw a propeller go out on a helicopter? I've been in helicopters. I've been on helicopters. I've been on helicopters. When is the last time you saw the propeller go out on a helicopter? And the reason they sabotaged, the helicopter, the propeller, is because when you get on a plane, and I'm not a pilot, but I have pilots as friends, you do all your system checks. You check all the systems. So if you want to sabotage an aircraft, you sabotage the propeller because that's the one place you don't check. You don't get on top of the helicopter and check the propeller. You don't get on top of the helicopter and check the propeller. And here's the other thing. If the fog was the reason for the crash, why didn't he crash into the mountains? Why didn't he crash into any of the physical structures? They didn't say that. They didn't say that they crashed into a mountain or crashed into the physical structure. They crashed on the ground. They crashed on the ground. The fog was not the reason for the crash. The fog. You know how many times you took an airplane in the fog? You know how many flights I've been in the fog? Helicopters in the fog? I took helicopters in Africa in the fog. In Africa, in Nigeria, in the fog, on a helicopter. They did not crash because of the fog. That was an expert pilot. That was an expert pilot. An expert pilot. Kobe was sabotaged. Not to mention, Kobe Bryant was engaged in a legal battle with a big pharmaceutical company over the use of the name Black Mamba. Kobe Bryant was engaged in a legal battle with a very powerful pharmaceutical company over the use of the name Black Mamba. Kobe Bryant was engaged in a legal battle with a pharmaceutical company over the use of the name Black Mamba. You understand me? Radar can see through the fog. Thank you, sister. Radar can see through the fog. They didn't crash because of no damn fog, and it wasn't no wind. The propeller was sabotaged. Let me say it again. The propeller was sabotaged. Let me say it again. The propeller was sabotaged. And what else do we know about Illuminati, Columinati, Bilderbergs, Rothschilds, CFR, Trilaterals? What do we know about the white secret societies that run the world? Whenever they commit a murder of a significant icon or personality, they always do it at a time where it is symbolic, ritualistically symbolic, politically symbolic, historically symbolic. LeBron James passed Kobe in Kobe's hometown of Philadelphia. LeBron James passed Kobe in Kobe's hometown of Philadelphia. En route to a loss to the Sixers, the Lakers lost the game, but LeBron replaced Kobe as the third highest scorer in NBA history. Ain't no coincidences. That's how they play. There's always a ritualistic symbolism to the timing of the assassinations. It is always a ritualistic symbolism to the timing of the assassinations. There is always a ritualistic symbolism to the timing of the assassinations. This was no damn accident. This was no accident. This was no accident. I don't think they intended to harm the other eight victims. I don't think they thought Kobe was taking his helicopter on Sunday. I think they thought they would catch Kobe on a Monday flying his helicopter himself, which is something he used to do a lot. They thought they would catch Kobe on Monday flying his own helicopter, something he used to do a lot. They didn't know he was going to take it out on Sunday. I don't think they intended for the other eight to be victims. But what do we know about the third rule of white supremacy. What is Dr. Umar's third rule of white supremacy? White supremacy is ruthless. White supremacy is ruthless. White supremacy is ruthless. If we got to kill your kids, kill innocent people, we'll do it. Let us not forget America let Pearl Harbor get bombed. Let us not forget America let Pearl Harbor get bombed. They had knowledge that the Japanese was coming to strike, and they let them strike to justify getting involved in World War II. Know your history. I know mine. Rest in peace, Kobe. Rest in peace, Kobe. Want to give my brother a little libation here at the FDMG. Get your donations in, cash.me. New Orleans, I will see you Saturday. New Orleans is going down in La...
Okay, I've been playing some, well, today's podcast is titled Victimhood 2022. The idea that I had was and I'm speaking out loud, does anybody have an exclusive rights on victimhood? And because tribally, because this planet, basically everybody belongs to a tribe, or most people belong to more than one tribe. So I was thinking, you know, with this war going on, invasion, whatever you might call it. Some people call it a war. Some people call it a conflict. The invasion over in Ukraine right now, where over a million people have left the country. You have had men, women, and children killed. And, of course, if you go online, there's no shortages of daily, actually almost hourly pictures of homes and apartment buildings and government structures that are being destroyed in Ukraine. But somehow various segments of the media, mainstream media or any kind of media, they find a way to find a victim within the victimhood story. Like, for instance, you have some, now mind you, the country's being invaded and people are trying to get out. Now, since this has been defined as tribal anyway, because the Russian tribe is invading the Ukrainian homeland tribe's land, and within that Ukrainian tribal land, you've got people from different parts of the world representing different tribes. Okay. However, matter of fact, you know what? Let me see. How can I put this? Africa, the continent of Africa, there are over 2,000, probably over 3,000, but I'm going to be conservative. In Africa, there are over we're talking about a continent with a billion people. In Africa, you have 2,000 indigenous languages spoken. All right. Africans, the ones on the continent, on a critical mass basis, are the most prolific polyglots on the planet. A bilingual person can speak two languages, but a polyglot often speaks 3 to 5 languages. So, I mean, they are prolific linguists. All right? And it's very tribal in Africa, as it is. It's tribal. Man, the United States, we have our tribes. You know, Europe has got, Europe is made up of a bunch of tribes. I mean, if, for instance, right now, like once again, a segment of the Russian, because Russia's got a lot of tribes. You know, you got your tribal people in Moscow. You go to Siberia, you know, you got another tribe of people there within Siberia. It, all over, I mean, the country's got 11 time zones. That's what started. But anyway, so out of this conflict, somebody brings up, and this is why I mentioned that Africa, there's over 2,000 indigenous languages. Somebody with the, now, because bombs don't discriminate. Bullets don't discriminate. So the people who have been, I mean, a tank, I saw, what, last week or the week before, I saw a tank run over a car. The tank didn't care. The tank wasn't going after anybody of a particular, we can't say. It was a Russian tank, and they were going, I guess, after that tribe, after whatever. But I'm sure the tank, the bullet, the bomb, wasn't looking at color. However, some kind of way, some journalist finds a way to racialize. And mind you, you know, I say this every now and then on this podcast, everybody shit on. Right now, Ukraine is being shit on. All right. However, within that, there's always a journalist that, and here's where I'm going with this, where they find one or two black people, and, you know, they get a victim story. I mean, mind you, everybody's getting shit on in Ukraine. But then they find somebody that, and they put the racial angle on it. And, man, when you're trying to, well, look, if you're trying to run for your life out of a country, you know, it's, I hate to say this, but every man for himself in many cases. So why should you, if you're black or whatever color or whatever tribe you belong to, it's every man for himself. Or in this case, every man, woman, and child. I mean, because you got people walking out of the country, taking the train out of the country, getting out of the country the best way they can. Some make it, and some don't. I mean, they can't pump the ATM machine. That's gone. You know, so, but for some reason, some people, you know what? Everybody, within every tribe, this is my belief, this is just my general belief, within every tribe, and we have many tribes here on the planet, okay, people that for some reason they want to hold exclusive rights on their victimhood story. Like when this whole thing clears up with Ukraine, matter of fact, not even when it clears up, you're going to have Ukrainians that will be crying the victim story. You're going to have Russians declaring the victim story. This whole conflict started off of somebody perceived themselves to be a victim. And then some of the diehard victimhood people, man, if they're living 50 years from now, some people will hold on to it for 50 years. Anyway, at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day, oh, and some people think their victimhood, because mind you now, with this thing going on in Ukraine, you know, I'm glad I'm not over there right now because, I mean, you can be sitting in your living room and then a bomb drops on you. And then, you know, to get out of the country, how are you going to get out of the country? Let's say you were preparing. There are people over in Ukraine, I'm sure, that were preparing to leave, and then a rocket hits their car or van or whatever, so now they can't get out that way. And all the money that they can't go to the ATM machines. And then you got people over in Russia, you know, because, a lot of Western businesses are temporarily suspending operations in there. So you got, you know, people at, a Big Mac last week was $36 over in Russia, hitting Moscow. But now I believe they can't even go to McDonald's in Russia, at least most of Russia. And they're going to be people that are hemming and hawing and crying the victim role on that. So with this whole thing going on right now, you've got victims on both sides of the table. And then within both camps, you know, you got people that are saying, well, we're African, but they won't let us out, so we're being victimized. It's racism. But you've got, matter of fact, let's take a look at, let's get some background before I go to the phone lines here. Ukraine. Let's look at Ukraine, okay. If my phone would load here. Check my connection. Okay, let's do it again. Ukraine. And Ukraine is located in Eastern Europe, and you got a lot of people that cry victimhood in those places. But okay, all right. In Ukraine, the official language is Ukrainian, although they do speak a lot of Russian in Ukraine. They also recognize Belarusian, Bulgarian, Crimean Tatar languages, Greek, Hebrew, Hungarian, Polish, Russian, Romanian, Slavic, Yiddish, and Gagauz. I'm not familiar with that language at all. Now, in Ukraine, the country is 77.8% Ukrainian, and it's 17.3% Russian and 4.9% others. So within their two primary ethnic groups are Ukrainian and Russian. And on both sides of the table, you've got victims in their mind, they're victims. And before I go to the phone lines here, let's go to, Russia. Okay, Russia is a huge landmass on two continents, actually. Okay, Russia, Russia has 6 primary ethnic groups. It's 80.9% Russian, 3.9% Tatar, 1.9% Ukrainian, 1.1% Bashkir, 1% Kuchvash, 1% Chechen, and then it's a 10.7% others, and that could include German or people from different other parts. It's 47.3% Christian, 41% Russian Orthodox. You got 6.5. Man, look, within every ethnic group, within every religious group, somebody, they're diehard people that where the victimhood thing is like, their victimhood status in their mind is the worst there ever has been on the planet. In any event, like I say, everybody, I just hope this thing doesn't turn into a World War III. Because then you'll have more victims in. 410, your mic is open.
Hotel Brother L.A., I was laughing at what you just said.
what part was that?
Why don't you want it to turn into World War III? Tell me.
There'll be more victims, man.
Huh?
There'll be more victims.
No, there's no such thing as a victim. If you're a black conservative, there's no such thing as a victim. And I'm going to go
No, what I'm saying is, what I'm saying is, they're victims, people within every tribe that, you know, hold it. Let me look up the definition of victim. Okay.
I looked it up before you got into your monologue. I did look
okay.
it up, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I got to look at it because maybe I'm saying something wrong. Definition. Victim. Okay. Victim, the first definition, a person harmed, injured, or killed as a result of a crime, accident, or other event or action.
Read the second definition.
All right. The person was tricked or duped. The third is a living creature killed as a religious sacrifice. I'm going to the Webster's, the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, or victim.
Yes.
One that is acted on and usually adversely affected by force or agent. One that is injured or destroyed or sacrificed under any various conditions. One that is subjected to oppression, hardship, or mistreatment. That's what I got out of Webster's Merriam.
Guess what I got. That's what
now,
I
what
got.
Do you have?
But now, why don't you want it to be World War III?
Well, with these nuclear weapons out here, I mean, with these nuclear weapons, it'll be some serious mass destruction.
The people that are killing
and you know what? And I don't want to be affected by that. I don't want to become a victim.
So there is such a thing as being a victim, is what you're saying.
Yeah, there is such a thing. People do get injured.
I understand that, but people that get killed or injured, if World War III breaks out, they would be victims of that war, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and they're victims right now over in Ukraine.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to communicate is nobody has exclusive rights on victimhood.
That's not true. That's not true.
You don't think so?
I know so, and you do too.
All right, I'm listening for this one.
European Jews have an exclusive right on being victims. All you got to do is just look at how pitiful they were, how badly they were treated, and how they're suffering now because of Nazism and racism. Because of what happened to them in the Holocaust. If you look at the news, look at all of the articles, look at all of the media, look at all of the books, and look, we even studied the Holocaust in school. It's in your curriculum in school. They have an exclusive right. And look, all you got to do is say, hello, Jew, and you're an anti-Semite.
They have an exclusive right on victimhood. If you don't believe it, ask Whoopi.
All right, now, what about what's going on right now? Well, what about what's going on right now? There was some guy from one of these countries in Africa, and he said he hasn't been able to get – I don't know, he might be out now, but last week he wasn't. He's being discriminated against because he's African. That's why they haven't processed him out of Ukraine yet.
Well,
so
you know,
he might think he's a victim.
Well, rightfully so. But all I'm telling you is you asked me, and you started off your show and said, who has exclusive rights on victimhood? And I gave you an answer.
The Ados people that want reparations, they feel, well, many of them, maybe not all, they feel they have an exclusive right.
Black folks don't have an exclusive right to be victims. In fact, that's one good thing about being a black person. You don't have a right to complain. You don't have a right to demand justice. You don't have a right to declare that you've been a victim. All you got to do is just look at slavery. Look, they tell you, hey, slavery's been done away with. Forget about it. In fact, slavery wasn't that bad anyway because they brought you out of the jungles of Africa and brought you over here in civilization. So, no. That's why I like being black.
Well, you do have some people that think that.
Huh?
You do have some people that think that way.
That's been taught in schools. That's been taught. Look, that's been in movies. That's been on radio shows and everything else over the years. I mean, propaganda has been saying, hey, look, you know, hey, we did you a favor by bringing you over here. So the thing is, no, black folks, we're not victims. That's why we fight so hard to try and get justice. That's why we're out in the streets all the time, yelling and hollering. But the only people that have exclusive rights on victimhood are Jews. And now I want you to prove me out to be a liar. Tell me why they don't have exclusive rights on being Jews, of being victims of the Holocaust. Come up with it.
Well, there are other people besides Jews that were killed.
That's not what I'm asking. I said they have exclusive rights on being victims because of what they went through in the Holocaust. Now, other people, you ain't heard other people be as strongly vocal about it as...
No. You're absolutely right. I mean, because if you... Like, well, let's go back about two, 3 weeks ago, Whoopi Goldberg said what she said. The Holocaust wasn't about... what did she say? It wasn't about...
She said it wasn't
racism,
about race.
It was about man's inhumanity to man.
She said it was white folks against white folks, didn't she? That's what she said.
Essentially.
She said it wasn't about race.
Yes, she
and
did
the thing
say
is, I'm going to ask
and
you
they,
this.
They shut her down. I'm surprised she didn't get fired behind that, actually.
She should have gotten fired. You know, because Whoopi has done a lot of things in her lifetime to insult black folks that I wish she had gotten fired. But the thing is this. I can't tell a person that claims to be a Jew from an Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Just on first glance now.
Uh-huh.
If they're walking down the street, I've been in meetings with them, and if somebody didn't tell me they were Jewish, I wouldn't know they were Jewish.
Right.
Now, call me an anti-Semite if you want to, but I'm just telling you what I saw and what I've been able to witness. Now, I don't know about you. You might be able to tell a Jewish person from a...
No, normally, I can't.
Okay. So now, the thing is, they said that the reason why they suffered the Holocaust was because it called them a despicable race. Well, now, black folks have been discriminated against, lynched, murdered, and put in slavery. And the thing is, we can't use that term. We can't say that, look, we suffered horrendously because of our race.
If we said that, then you got a lot of black conservatives that would come out and say, well, now you can't use race. It was economics. It was classism. But the thing is, they got away with it, and they had her suspended. In fact, I'm surprised she didn't get fired, too.
Yeah, yeah, I'm surprised she didn't get fired.
Yeah, and look,
I didn't disagree with what she said. But I was kind of, well, yeah, actually, I wasn't surprised because basically, yeah, you know what, I guess you're right. They, on the surface, it seems like they have exclusive rights to victimhood.
Oh, no, they do. Now, look, let me give you this one. Dylann Roof went into a black church and killed a state senator and a bunch of black folks praying. They weren't gonna declare that what do you call that term crime against
humanity?
What was it? No, a crime against you know when the Justice Department
come
in
a hate
and
crime?
A hate crime. They weren't gonna do that. But now some black folks went up there in New Jersey and a couple of other incidences where I think one in Pittsburgh where they went in and killed some Jewish parishioners, and immediately before the bodies was even cold, they declared that a hate crime. If in order for something to be declared a hate crime against a black person, you almost got to declare it an act of war to get that done. But now, if you're a news watcher, that incident that happened in Pittsburgh and that incident that happened in New Jersey before those bodies was even cold, they was on the microphone saying, "Hey, look, this and look, these are authorities saying this is a hate crime." But now they didn't do that originally with the black church down there in South Carolina. In fact, that girl, the Indian girl that was the governor down there, and that piece of slime, that's a congressman that was cheated on his wife down there in South Carolina, they had already started an offensive to say, hey, wait a minute, we can't declare that a hate crime until those black folks got up there crying and forgiving him and every damn thing else. But the thing is, black folks don't have that privilege or that right to say they're victims. In fact, who's a bigger victim than white females? So the thing is, you ask who had the exclusive rights to declare victimhood. I just gave it to you. And if you can prove me out to be a liar, have at it.
Well, I can't debate you on a Jewish question at all.
Well, you can.
No, I don't want to get in trouble with them.
That's right. That's the problem right there. See, because
I don't
the next thing
be
they're
shut
gonna call you a Semite. But see, I don't give a shit. I'm just being truthful about it. I don't have anything to lose. Period. For telling the truth.
Yeah, you got to walk your eggshells when you're dealing with. It's eggshells when you're dealing with certain people.
Well, that's my point. But black folks don't have that right. Even black folks will jump up and say, "There you go, playing that victim card again." Well, hell, we don't.
And we never say that with other people.
Have you ever heard it said about the Jews using that anti-Semite card?
You know what? I've never heard that said. And if a person,
and
you know what?
Will.
Now you know what? Now I'll give you a scenario. Had Whoopi said that, she would have been fired.
What? That anti-Semite card?
If she said Jewish people play the victim card.
Of course.
She would have been fired.
Yeah, of course. You better not say it.
You can't say that.
In fact, they probably would have had to.
Oh, it was borderline. She was borderline. What she said,
and it was harmless.
Yeah, I agree.
It was harmless. So,
but the fallout, woo. And I'm sure some people call for her head.
Of course,
she must have some She's got some people in high places that liked her.
And she has kissed their butts for years.
That's true.
She has a staunch defender of Jewish rights.
Look at her last name. Because her birth name is Johnson.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, Karen Johnson, exactly. some name like that.
Yeah. But you know, that's why come I have a problem with color folk, you know, artificial black folk, you know, ABFs, I call them. Because, see, we're quick to jump on the bandwagon to criticize anybody black that complains about being mistreated or when we complain about the injustice of the system.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go right along with white folk. But the thing is, we have some people that, hey, look, as long as it's a white victim, we're okay. You know, we jump right in there on it. I give you another one, and I'm gonna give you this one, and I want you to say whether I'm wrong or not. When those Haitians were down there at the border of Texas, they were whipping them with those little things that you put on, those lariats that you beat horses with and everything. They shipped their behinds. They shipped their behinds back to Haiti, and some of them hadn't lived in Haiti for 10 or 15 years, had left Haiti for years. They shipped them back to Haiti. All of them little children down there, them Hispanic children and those people that was down there at the border years back when Trump was there and everything, have you heard what happened to those people? Did they send them back the way they came?
I haven't heard anything about that.
I know you haven't because they filtered them into the American landscape. You ain't heard nothing about it. So, you know, I'm giving you examples, you know, whether you want to go along with it or not. But I'm just telling you that whenever those thousands and thousands of Hispanics come up here marching and everything to the border, you never see them send them back where they came from. They always, and look, I'm going to go on the line and say they filter them right into the American landscape, and they're just waiting until they can legalize.
Right.
So, now, call me a liar on that, you know, but as a black person, you know, that's why I'm glad I can't make excuses. I can't.
No, we can't. We're not allowed to.
No. And look, you know what? I don't want you to go on the limb out here. This is my opinion. And I don't want you to go out there so you get criticized.
We're not allowed to make excuses. And from the looks of it, it seems like on a practical basis that I'm even afraid to say their name, have exclusive rights.
You afraid to say whose name? The J word?
Yeah.
Well, I can say it because I don't give a damn. You know, truth is truth. You know, and look, I'm not a public official, but you are. But you asked the question. You open that door, and I stepped in it. Let your boy come in here and let's see what he thinks.
He's been sending me texts, but I haven't seen him on the board lately.
I know he's out there somewhere. I know he's out there, but you know, I was working and I heard you say that, and I said, you know what? Yeah, I wasn't going to call in, but I just had to call in because, see, you were getting ready to get too far out there. I had to kind of, you know, rein you in.
I never thought about it that way, but, yeah, with the J-word folk, it seems like they have exclusive rights.
And
enforced.
Yeah, and enforced. Everybody enforces it for them, you know. And look, white women and gays. God darn it, you go out there and slap a gay or say something bad about a gay person.
You can't say nothing about gay people or transgender, none of that.
They're victims. Special laws have been passed for them and everything. So, you know, but you know what? But you know what? As a black person, you don't have that privilege or that right. Everybody's a victim except black folk. Like you said about them people over there in the Ukraine, pulling them off trains and everything. Yeah, they're victims because they specifically pointed them out and said, look, you get the hell off this train. Pull them out. And say, look, you get in the back, just like back in the South in the 40s and 50s, you get in the back of the bus. You know what? We don't think of them as victims, though. You know, the news people pointed that out when they shouldn't have. You know, news people not even supposed to point out injustice when it comes to blacks. You know, the thing is, why are you putting that story out there and causing division? You know, being a troublemaker about something, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, so I just thought I'd throw that out.
You got me on that one.
I hope not, you know, because, you know.
Well, you're right. It let me see, there's only so. I've done over 2,000 It's My Houses. It's some topics I haven't covered.
You're right. And,
and I'm not going to cover it.
You better not. Because somebody might come knocking to your door. Look, I sent you that text on those black churches. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it.
Oh, let me check my, you sent it to my new number?
No, the 863 number.
Oh, no, the 863, all right. The SIM card on that don't work. You're going to, hold it. Let me send it. I'm going to send you a text right now from this new phone.
Well, don't give it out on the air.
No. I'm going to text you. I'm just say send here. Send here. Yeah, the last thing I got from you was February 21st. Here. And I just sent it. Just send it on that number.
Okay, I'll send it after the show.
Okay.
You know, it's linked.
Oh, I'm
going to
wrap up
now
anyway because it's 12:30. Food? Yeah. Well, yeah, okay. You got me on that one.
Well,
there
is
you named three groups.
Did I?
Well, the J people.
You,
white women, and the trans, that whole LGBTQ group.
Yeah. And look, anything that's close to. I said Jews, women, gays, and the Hispanic immigrants slightly, because, you know, we got this thing about black and Latino, and we think that, you know, they're in with us and they're suffering just as bad as we are, when in actuality they aren't. You know, we seem to think that people of color, see, I hate that term. See, blacks are very exclusive. See, we try to lump everybody in and try to be the moral standard for everybody, and everybody plays tribes, like you said before, races.
Right.
And I know you get tired of me saying it, but see, everybody practice self-preservation and survival of the fittest. And survival of the fittest is natural selection, really. That's what it is. You're going to select those things that gives you the self-preservation. You know, hey, look, when it comes to industries, you're going to put those industries to protect that and build on it and expand it. You're going to make sure that you multiply your race so that the thing is you have the sufficient numbers to protect your self-interest and on and on and on, you know. But we have been talked out of that, too. Whenever you see a black person practicing do for self, and determine their own destiny, like the black towns and the black business sections, like Tulsa and all of that. What happens is, you know, you have in Wilmington, what happened is you have that group that wants to come in and destroy whatever you have. See, that's when racism becomes a problem. And that's where we become victims because, see, you're only a victim if you allow a bully to come up and knock you upside the head and you don't hit him back or you don't fight back. See?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right.
You know, I'm getting scared here, L.A. You agree with me and everything this morning. And
no, but
me.
I never thought of that. I mean, look, the white women in this country, the LGBT. I was in a coffee house, Starbucks, a few years ago, right outside of D.C., Tacoma Park, Maryland. And it was me and two high school buddy and another guy. And somebody said, told something funny about a gay person. And I guess the conversation level was kind of loud, but only after something was said about a gay person did the manager come over and speak on it. And she was polite, but it was like, man, you can't say anything these days. And even like some of the comedians, they're not here anymore, like Don Rickles. Don Rickles, you know, a lot of his repertoire was, you know, ethnic jokes. He went in on everybody. But today, yeah, if he was around, he couldn't do that.
Well, let me give you one. Joe Brogan, using the N-word and calling people, black people, monkeys or apes. Mm-hmm. He's still working, isn't he?
I guess. I haven't followed him.
Yeah, he's still working. Right. So the thing is, you can get away with insulting black folk, but you can't do with all these other groups. You can't get a comedian worth his or her salt to get up and say something about crackers. Now, your buddy that just died, Richard Pryor's buddy that just died. What was his name? You had him on the show here.
You talking about Paul Mooney?
Paul Mooney did. But now,
I don't think he can get away with it if he was still living.
Yeah, he got away with it until he died.
He got away with it for a long time.
Well, he was getting away with it before he got dementia, you know. In his last shows, right up to the time that he got dementia, he come down on them hard, you know. But you can't get nobody to say cracker. You can't get nobody to say anything about Jews. In fact, you can't even get him to say hardly anything about Hispanic. And you damn sure can't say nothing about him being gay. But these black comedians, they get up there and they use the N-word. But Joe Brogan, Spotify, they've been criticizing him for I don't know how long, but they just awarded him a $135 million contract. But the thing is, I'm just showing you the standards. Hmm. And we enforce it with these damn dumbass rappers. And these blaxploitation movies. And the one thing that gets me about this other guy, this good comedian, now I can't think of his name, up there in Ohio.
You talking about Dave Chappelle?
Dave Chappelle. You know, the most insulting thing that I saw was when he called a bunch of white folks niggas. And these black rappers, they call white folks niggas.
Yeah,
but they won't let them say cracker. And they won't let them say kike. That goes for Jews. I think Clive Davis told Jadakiss, he said, look, you can talk about your people all you want to, but I will not allow you.
Well, you know what's interesting? Michael Jackson, when he was living, in one of his songs, he used the kike word.
No, he said Jimmy.
They had to re-edit that. They put out another version of that same record, removing that word.
They pulled everything off the shelf. He said Jimmy. That's what he said, Jimmy. Just Jimmy. And they pulled everything off the shelf and had those CDs reprogrammed.
Right.
So. So, you know, the thing is, I know you were going to the point where, you know, blacks are victims. They were always claiming to be victims, but today
I got a back trip a pedal now.
Yeah, you were going there because I had to come in. I was just going to listen. And look, if your boy were here, I know he'd go in on it. You know, I know he'd go in on it because, see, that's what a black conservative does. You know, and look, I'm saying black conservative now, because see,
it's mostly
liberals
black, because like, you probably can't stand her. I was a big Candace Owens fan, but Candace when she, what was it, the what was the case, George Floyd, when she
yes.
said that the jury got it wrong with the George Floyd case, I'm looking at,
yeah.
you know what, Candace, well, I hope this doesn't happen. Candace is married now. And
yeah, who is she married?
She's married to a white dude, but here's where I'm going with this. She had a, they had a child last year, a boy. And that boy is going to be classified, I hope it doesn't happen to him, but I think Candace Owens, 15, 16, 17, 18 years from now, I believe Candace Owens will change her position.
No, she won't change her position.
You don't think so? Cause her, hey,
yeah.
Because her son will be subject. She had a black son.
Well, look.
He's safe for the time being, but he's going to get pulled over like the rest of his men pulled over sooner or later.
Well, look, I know you're short on time. Look, let me give you this. Candace Owens won a discrimination suit. You know that, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah, you look up her bio. The NAACP won a discrimination suit case for her back in the day because the kids was discriminating against her, calling her names and all of this stuff. So, look,
mm-hmm.
she's well aware of racism. But, see, 30 pieces of silver is a very strong motivation. You know, when you got to pay your rent, pay your car payment, and keep the water and the lights on running. You know, hey, look, you'll sell your mother out for some people. Some people have no morals at all. And the thing is this. But look, let me give you this, and I'm going to let you go. There was a biracial kid there. Was it in Minnesota or where? Had a white mother and a black father.
Uh-huh.
But he had Afrocord features. And the girl said she thought, and you're probably aware of this case, she said she thought she had a taser, and she went there with a gun drawn, a service revolver drawn. And she said, taser. And she thought she had a taser in her hand, and she killed
her. Oh,
girl,
that case from Minnesota.
That's right. She got off the
job. Yeah, that police officer, she only got a 2 year sentence?
No. She got, did she get house arrest or she got off?
She got a 2 year sentence.
Yeah, but the thing is, she'd already served some time, so she'll get out in probably about 6 months.
Well,
but,
she's not going to do much time.
She's in a house arrest. She didn't go to jail. But here's the thing. See, on your show, you say, well, you know, a Nigerian never gets pulled over. And that damn Baltic, ever what it is, Baltic Avenue guy.
Oh, yeah, Well,
you know, these Africans, they never get pulled over. They never get abused, and they never get shot. And the thing is, biracial kids, you know, they come through and nothing happens to them. Well, we have, and Hispanics, they don't get shot. Well, see, all of these things have been proven to be false because that boy was biracial, very high yellow, almost white. And the thing is, they shot him.
His mother's white, yeah.
That's right. And look, that Hispanic guy over there in Virginia in the Army, he came out there with a Hispanic name, but, you know, he didn't, he spoke English, but the thing is, he was in the Army. They pulled his behind out. Abno Luema, whatever his name is, I think one of them was Haitian. They messed him up by pushing a broom handle up his rectum. And
yeah,
then you had
the what was that case up? This was several years ago. Amadou Diallo.
Yeah.
Unarmed, and he was shot. Man, he was shot at like 40-something times. 20-something bullets hit him.
Yeah.
And they moved the case to. Well, you know. Now you know what though. Karmically, not too long after that, 9/11 happened.
Yeah, but all I'm telling you is that at first glance, It doesn't matter who. I told you yesterday, whatever day it was, it doesn't matter if you're black. You can be the richest person in the world, the most educated person in the world. Your politics can be whatever it is that you want to be. And, you know, you can live anywhere you want to live. And the thing is, you're judged by your color. Now, you don't believe that, but I'm just telling you that blacks are judged by a different standard, by everybody. Koreans, Arabs, whites, Jews, and any damn body else that comes over here. We're at the bottom of the totem pole, and it doesn't matter. It's not class, it's race. And I'm going to give you this. If Google chart, the feudal system chart, mm-hmm. and it'll show you that European serfs was at the bottom. They were slaves. They were bound to the earth. If you look at that same chart, the same thing applies in this nation, and we're under the serfs because poor whites have more rights than we do. So a lot of people say, well, you got money, you can do anything. Look at O.J. But O.J. spent a lot of money. And the thing is, a poor white boy with some faded-ass dungarees been wearing them for 3 years, not washing them, stringy hair, dirty and everything else, can go in there and get more justice than the average rich black guy. I've seen it, and you've seen it. Sir George Zimmerman got off scot-free. But Bill Cosby went to jail. Now, and look, here's the other thing. They'll never let you forget that O.J. got off scot-free. I'm surprised they haven't had a special on O.J. Because every year since then, they've had something to do with O.J. to bring that up. He's the nigga that got away. And I'm going to let you go, man. I've told you.
All right, thanks for the – but you already I had to backpedal. You're right. You pointed out the groups that do have exclusive rights.
Now, look, I'm going to say, I don't want you to bring this up with your boy, Piyaki, because, see, I don't want you to lose favor with him. But the thing is,
it is what it is.
Don't even say it. I'll check you out later.
All right, then. Bye. Talk to you soon. All right.